reported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. It's Wednesday, April 16th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chi, Shawa, Toaksuk Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also now join us behind the scenes here in the studio via YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Facebook and Instagram pages. Today, April is National Poetry Month. Mary Lou Spartz is here from the Byrne Thompson Writing Group to share about their reading this Saturday to honor the month. Theatre Alaska is reviving the student plays that premiered this past January at the Radio Plays. This time out at Thunder Mountain in the Community Forum, Student Voices on Stage. It's happening tomorrow night, Thursday, April 17th. And we chat with theatre at Latitude 58 about their latest production opening this week, Jesus Christ Superstar. Those conversations are living lands and a savory moment coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You are listening to Community Sport at Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also join us behind the scenes here in the studio via KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages. And you can leave us a comment or ask a question or just say hi. This Saturday, April 19th at 1 p.m. at the City Museum, members of the Byrne Thompson Writing Group will read original works in honor of National Poetry Month. And here to share more about this event and the Byrne Thompson Writing Group in general is Mary Lou Spartz. Gunath Chi, Sha'i Gudi, thank you so much, Mary Lou. It's a pleasure to see you. Wasi'iti, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. It's so good to see you, Boston.
It's so good to see you. I like to tell everyone we did a play together.
Yes, we did.
In 1991, it was my first time down to Juno over at the Perseverance Theater, a little show called Amigo's Blue Guitar.
Yeah, Amigo's Blue Guitar.
And I think you played my grandmother.
I did. I did play your grandmother.
It was such a fun production. I think I was, I don't know, I was all of like 19 or 20. I can't remember how old I was, but I was a youngin', and I loved Juno. I fell in love with Juno, and now here I am.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, good.
And it's always great to see you, so thank you for coming in. So let's first talk about the Byrne Thompson's Writing Group. Can you tell us about the group and what it does?
Well, we meet twice a month, every other Wednesday, and although we sometimes do have a change in a venue of where we are, but we usually meet at the downtown library, and we meet from 4 to 6, and we encourage people to bring their writing that they've been working on, and they may have questions about what they're just questions about where they're headed with the piece, or what the response is from the group. And we have a variety of, well, we can only really accommodate so many, because when you're responding to questions about the poems and the other writing, we do include prose too. You have to kind of move along.
The sessions, yeah, they can take forever if you're commenting on it all, right?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. And, but it's an open forum where people can come and share their writing. And
whatever you have that you'd like to share. We're certainly eager to support whatever you're working on.
Yeah.
We don't put ourselves on the side of we're going to correct everything, or we're going to change everything, or we're going to make this work for you in a different way. What you bring us is what we'll take a look at.
That's awesome. And what kind of things do you work on?
Well, what can I say? Over the years, I've done a variety of things. Let's see, some of my poems. I tend to like the lighter side of poetry.
Uh-huh.
I like poems that have a kind of a wonderfulness to them, that have that are not comic, but are not dealing with the big themes which poets write about, of course, and one of the big themes is death. I kind of like steer away from that.
So you're taking a little lighter side look at life.
I just kind of usually. Now, that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm. But. And is it usually poetry that you do, or do you also do like narrative and prose and stuff?
I've done a lot of playwriting,
mm-hmm.
Which I really enjoy. That's really great.
Yeah.
I'm really, really content with poems.
Yeah.
I love the poems. I love to read poems. I love to read all kinds of poets, from John Milton to, Billy Collins.
And this Saturday at 1:00 at the Juneau Douglas City Museum, right?
That's right. At 2:00.
Oh, it's at 2:00. They have it down as 1:00.
Yes, I know. That was just a little glitch.
Oh, a little glitch. So 2 p.m. on Saturday.
We'll start. I think that the museum opens at 1:00.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what it is. Okay. Yeah. They had it in their publicity as 1:00.
Yeah, I know they did.
So we'll make that change. We'll make it 2:00.
It's 2:00 that we'll start with our poets.
And what will be happening?
Well, we will read from what we're working on, and we will hope that we will have, a variety of people there that are curious and interested, and poets themselves. And I'd like to invite people that are coming in from out of town. It's the Easter weekend, you already know that. And so Saturday would be, if you're in town for the Easter weekend,
mm-hmm.
or for any other of the many events that are going on.
Yeah, this town's chock full. Even though Folk Fest is over, still tons of stuff happening.
Just tons of stuff going
on. Yeah,
And you're living out in maybe Gustavus or Haines, or you're coming in from one of the smaller communities,
mm-hmm.
And you have, you would be curious as to what we're doing here. Please come. It's at the City Museum, which is at 4th and at Main and 4th.
Yeah, right across from the
right
state
across
capital.
From the capital. Yeah.
Pretty easy to find.
I think so, yeah.
And why do you all, I mean, I guess there's probably many members in the group who are poets, but you're also celebrating National Poetry Month. And you do this on the annual, right? You do this every year?
We try to, yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Tell me, who is Byrne Thompson?
Well, Byrne Thompson is deceased. She's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
But she held the group together at a particularly critical time, when it was very slim pickings for poets, and it had been pretty good. It had been a pretty good practice for a while, but Byrne came in, and she would go down to the library, the city library,
mm-hmm.
And hold the 2 hours, mm-hmm. and talk about writing and talk about her work. And she was a little tiny lady. She almost, she turned sideways. She almost disappeared. And she mm-hmm. was charming. She had a cerebral palsy.
Mm.
So it left her somewhat disabled.
Mm-hmm.
Never seemed to stop her, but she certainly was someone to be thoroughly admired.
And so she led the group, sort of helped it grow.
Yes.
And then after her passing, I think it was in 2013, the group was renamed in her honor.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And how long have you been a member of the group, Mary Lou?
Well, since I started off with Byrne.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I was one of about three people that met with her.
Yeah.
We were there. Oh, we didn't start picking up additional writers for about 6 months to a year.
Mm. So there was only three of you at the time?
Yes.
Wow. And now how many do you have in the group now?
Well, it varies. As you...
Yeah, it comes and goes, right?
But we usually have, I shouldn't say usually. We have between, depending on what the season is, about 6 to 10 people.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And we're always encouraging new people to come and to enjoy just the camaraderie of being with other writers.
And you don't necessarily even have to be a writer to go to the group and listen, do you? Or do you prefer that people are interested in writing at least?
Yeah, we really do think that this is one of those places where writers should gather.
Yeah.
Of course you can come and listen if you like.
Especially on Saturday at 2 p.m., right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're going to be sharing.
Well, that's what we would like to have people come and and listen to what we've been working on through the winter.
Mm-hmm. What have you been working on? Have you got, like, does the snow, like, make you giggle and you make poems about that? I'm just curious.
Oh, yes, I have. We all have our snow poems. I think you can't get away from that.
Right. Or the darkness poems, too, right?
Darkness is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Rain.
Mm-hmm.
Rain's another one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a feeling that you should write about what you know about.
Mm.
It maybe yes, maybe no. You write about whatever it is that's out there. It's interesting for me that poets, where do those poems come from?
Mm-hmm.
And do you get to dictate what they are and how they develop, or is that kind of a lesson in futility?
Does it work for you? Like, you just have a thought or you see a one line in your brain and you write that down and you go from there? How do you write?
Well, there's all kinds. You know what? I've been writing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had young children, I used to get a one-liner. Something had come to me, and I'd write it on whatever piece of paper I could find,
mm-hmm.
and stick it in my pocket.
Mm.
And then whenever the time came, I would empty my pocket of these little funny little notes and for the laundry.
Yeah. Hopefully you didn't wash them and they went away.
Yeah, well, that would be...
That happens,
that
I'm sure.
Happens.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes it's one or two lines. Sometimes the way somebody's wearing a hat or the way somebody is speaking to another person.
Mm.
Or just the moments that you share from your own collection of memories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's never the same for any two poets.
Right, right. That's why I'm always interested in people's process. Like, how do you begin? How do you do that? But I'm also like, you talked about, you mentioned that you like to sort of take the lighter side of things. So I'm just curious, what's like the silliest thing you've ever written about?
Well, I don't think it's silly.
Okay.
Let me see. Well, I shouldn't really talk about it, but I'd have a poem now I'm working on about Henny Penny.
Henny Penny.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Okay.
Are you familiar with...
I've heard the phrase, but I don't quite know what that is.
Well, it comes from childhood.
Uh-huh.
A henny penny, you can probably guess, is a chicken.
Already funny, yeah.
And so she appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she doesn't. She's a nuisance, but she has a point.
Mm.
So I'm trying to work with her on that.
You are reading some of your poetry on Saturday?
Yeah, I'll be reading a few. Yeah.
But Henny Penny won't be ready yet, probably.
I hope.
Maybe? Maybe? Maybe. Ah, that would be so great. It'd be great.
Be funny.
Yeah. Now that you put it out there, and now everyone's going to be wanting Henny Penny. They're going to be shouting, Henny Penny, when you are on your turn to read.
Well, I guess one of my favorites is from John Milton. Are you familiar with John
mm-hmm.
Milton?
Yeah.
Okay. And his... you know, he had the bower in paradise.
Mm.
And so his spouse was she didn't have anything to do. They didn't have clothes, so she didn't have any laundry. And they didn't have any need for food was provided. And the weather was always perfect. And but he was... Adam was friendly with the archangel,
mm.
and he spent a lot of time with that dude. And kind of left Eve to find her own company.
Mm.
And you know what happened?
Tell me.
Well, don't you know what happened?
I want you to tell me.
Oh. Well, she found a friend in an apple tree.
Was he slithery and evil?
Well, he was charming. He was charming.
Right, right, right.
And so, why not?
And here we are. That's so funny. This Saturday at the City Museum, the Burns Thompson Writing Group will read original works in honor of National Poetry Month. It's Saturday, April 19th at 2 p.m. At the City Museum. So if you're on Facebook and you see that event, it will say 1 p.m., but it's actually 2 p.m.
Well, I think the museum opens at 1.
They open at 1, so you could probably start arriving there. Yeah, people will be around there. That's so good.
Yeah.
Mary Lou, it's always fantastic to have you come in and talk a little bit about writing and about Burne Thompson and, of course, National Poetry Month. I really appreciate you being here today and telling us all about it.
Oh, it's just lovely to see you.
It's lovely to see you, too. Gwyneth Cheesh for being here.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Up next, you are listening to Juno Afternoon from KTOO. We're going to listen to this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One.
I'm Antonia Gonzalez, and this is Our Living Lands. Last year, 4 dams on the Klamath River were removed. For Indigenous nations in Oregon and California, it was a victory decades in the making. It was the largest dam removal in U.S. history, and tribes are already seeing river health and salmon populations improving. Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding spoke to Grist reporter Anita Hofschneider about her reporting and how the dams came down.
Can you share some historical context on the Klamath River and its importance to the Indigenous tribes from that area?
The Klamath River in the Pacific Northwest is a 263-mile waterway that winds through the ancestral homelands of 5 Indigenous nations. And up until about 100 years ago, it was one of the largest salmon runs in the West Coast. I spoke with a man named Jeff Mitchell, who is part of the Klamath tribes, and he told me that generations ago, a fourth of his tribe's diet came from salmon. And then one day, a utility came and built a dam that blocked salmon from accessing the river upstream. And so it's hard to describe what salmon meant to Jeff's people, but what I can say is that it had an incredible importance to their food. It had incredible importance to their culture and spirituality. And in the blink of an eye, it was taken away.
The demolition of the four hydroelectric dams on the Klamath River, it's a huge win for these tribes in Oregon and California, especially being like, you know, a decades-long fight. How did the tribal leadership and advocacy play a role in making this dam removal a reality?
The dam removal that took place last fall is one of the biggest victories for Indigenous environmental justice in North American history. It was brought about because of the persistence of tribes and their allies across decades. In the beginning, it looked as if it would be an impossible task. And what the Klamath Dam removal campaign shows is what it takes to enact change, you know, across decades. And all the thousands of people who worked on this project, all the different tiny moments that led up to this point, how they all kind of came together to make this achievement happen.
And what was the most powerful story that you heard from any tribal members that you might have spoke to about the dam removal and what it means for them and their communities?
There was one man whose story didn't make it into the final piece, whose experience still stuck with me. His name is Ron Reed, and he's a cultural biologist from the Karuk tribe. And Ron told me that to sit in those rooms and talk about dams kind of in the abstract, also knowing that his mom had passed away from a disease that she may not have received if salmon had been a big part of her diet, was a big turning point for him. It really helped him understand like what was at stake with this fight. And his contributions may not be always acknowledged or recognized, but who played an integral part in getting the dam removal to eventually happen.
And when you were doing this story, were there any conflicting perspectives either within, you know, the tribal community or non-tribal residents in that area?
One of the things that made the dam removal campaign successful was the willingness of tribes to put aside some of their historic differences and work together. And at the same time, over the long course of the campaign, there were several instances in which their perspectives diverged. For example, in the late 2000s, there was a negotiated settlement to remove the dams, and the Hoopa tribe didn't agree with it. They thought that it let the utility off the hook for all the damage and harm that they had caused to their people and their ecosystem, and so they walked away. And so there were definitely times when people disagreed, and whether it was through protest, whether it was through, you know, legislative advocacy, there are so many, regardless of how it happened, people were moving towards the same goal, and that's how they were able to make this happen.
Is there anything else that you would like, you know, our listeners to know about this story and about the dam removal, and if you'd like to share anything, any last thoughts?
I think the last thought I would say is that this dam removal sets a new precedent for how the U.S. manages its water, and that's something that is extremely important as climate change continues to make water scarce in certain places and underscore the importance of managing our water. And it also represents the first real attempt at the kind of river restoration that Indigenous nations and environmentalists have long demanded. For so long, dam removal was seen as something that was impossible. And even though it's been happening more frequently in recent years, to have it occur at this scale is extremely significant. And I think for the people I've interviewed who worked really hard on it, that's something that they feel proud of.
That was Anita Hofschneider, who reports on Indigenous Affairs for GRIST. You can read more about the Klamath Dams at grist.org. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kuwanuk Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That was Our Living Lands from Native Voice One. We chat with Theodore Laska about a one-night special event up next here on Juno Afternoon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. And this week's word comes from Kushtak U Bill Fawcett. The word this week is Yana'ait.
Yana'ait.
That means wild celery. And here's a sentence. Wild celery is very good. Let's hear it again.
Yana'ait.
Wild celery. Gunash Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kushtak o ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihwa Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Akkwan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tomorrow night, Thursday, April 17th at 7 p.m. out at Thunder Mountain Middle School, Theater Alaska presents a one-night-only event, Community Forum, Student Voices on Stage. It's three impactful plays written by students with themes and topics that will then be discussed in an open community forum. And I'm joined by three members of the Theater Alaska team that is putting this all together. In the studio, I have Brian Crowder, production manager at Alaska, Theater Alaska. I have Mary Ellefson, who is listed down as production coordinator, but is also a playwright and a runner and awesome community member. Gunnath Cheesh, Mary, nice to see you.
Thank you, Boston.
And then Alex Wagner, who is also working on the production as well as an actor, Wasi Ati.
Yes.
Gunnath Cheesh, how are you today, Alex?
I'm good. How are you, Boston?
I'm excellent. It's so good to have you all in here. So let's set the scene first, because these plays, Brian, you were involved in the very beginning of the creation of these plays. Ryan Conroe, a well-known Juno frequenter now. He used to be a liver, but now he's just a frequenter. but he came up in, it was November, December?
December, yeah.
December. And you and he, you were assisting him. You went into classrooms Juno and were working with teams of classmates to make. Tell us a little bit about what you did when you went into the classroom.
Yeah, so this was in probably around mid-December, before break. We went into the classrooms and I assisted Ryan in helping these students in various classes, both at Yakuske and Yada Kale, write plays. And it was a one-week process, and we were able to visit with each of the classes four times during that 1 week. And the idea was to hopefully, as you know, we did the Alaska Theater Festival radio plays back in February, and the idea was that if we were able to generate plays from these classrooms through the student voices, that we would like to be able to feature those plays in the festival as well. And so me and Ryan went into the schools. Ryan invited me to assist him, which I was very grateful for, because I've known Ryan for a number of years, but I've never gotten to work with him on a project. And so it was really great to...
He's the worst, isn't he?
Oh, just terrible.
So
terrible.
Glad he's not here right now.
He's the best. He's the best, everybody.
He's so great.
He's one of the best people we all know.
It's incredible watching him work in the classroom, too, with the kids. Yeah. You can tell he knows like the back of his hand.
Yeah.
He has a great rapport with the students. He engages with them, even students that might not otherwise want to engage with their preconceptions of what theater is and what is expected of them, just being around the word theater. He did a great job of putting everybody at ease and making everyone, all the students, really feel like it was all of their voices creating this piece. Mm-hmm. And so we went into the school and we started out with each classroom on Monday, and we talked about what radio plays were. We listened to some radio plays. We talked about theater of the mind is what radio plays really are, because it's our individual visualizations of what we hear with the words within the plays. So it's our own imagination creating these images in our mind from what we hear. And so that was kind of what we were trying to relay to the students in that process, is how do we evoke something out of a listener when they're listening to something live on the radio with just
anything.
Their ears.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we talked about that a bit and like what we would need to do that, including Foley, which they became very intimately aware of, which is the sound effects for the shows. And so it was really fun getting the students' ideas on, you know, what we could use for Foley, what sounds they wanted incorporated that would help tell the story that they were trying to tell for each of the respective classrooms.
Yeah, that's really cool. And Mary, out of this came, because when you did the festival, your play was also in that same afternoon with the student plays. And out of this came some really interesting themes that these students brought up. Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of plays they ended up writing?
Yeah. Can I backtrack a little?
Yeah.
Just because I yesterday had an awesome conversation with the teacher at Yokusuke, who's mm-hmm. on our panel tomorrow night, and she was telling me how, and I don't want to misquote, how incredibly inspiring it was to have Brian and Ryan come into her class, and just how, you know, as teachers, you teach all these subjects, but how she was just so inspired by the way they were teaching English. And I look at it as a playwright of not only teaching English, but having 20 diverse voices in a classroom work towards inclusion of hearing all of those voices, you know, in one script. And we had this great conversation about how it just got her. She's so fired up about next year and fired up about tomorrow night being on the panel and listening to these again. Yeah. So to fast track that afternoon or evening when we heard these plays, I wasn't involved in the process, but have been before in creating team plays. But I was really blown away by the depth, the whole spectrum of ideas and issues that came up that the kids had, the young people, the young artists had collaborated on creating. From whether we're talking about the flood to addiction to merging our high schools, there was laughter, there was texture, there was an opportunity to breathe and understand and just hear their voices. And that, to me, is why I'm sitting here, because I did talk to all of these people after and go, we have to do this more with this. We have to hear these again. This is this awesome opportunity for us to be in conversation in this community with a generation that has a lot to say.
Yeah. And so they wrote these themes. Like you mentioned, there was something on the flood. There was something about drug addiction, something about the combining of the high schools. And there was a fourth?
Salmon conservation.
Yeah. Salmon conservation, that's right. So then how did this evening that's happening tomorrow, this community forum student voices on stage, how did this come about? Who wants to answer that question?
Well, Mary kind of started that process a little bit. She, like she said, she was brought it to our attention that this was something that needed.
Okay, I didn't really bring it to their attention. I was a little aggressive.
Mary Ellison? No.
Never. No, but she, like I said, she's kind of the momentum for this project, and she wanted us to have the opportunity to share these with the community again in a different platform.
Mm-hmm.
But part of this presentation that's also really special is we're taking these shows into the high schools and performing it for the high schoolers, because I'm not sure how many people, you know, they're teenagers, so I'm not sure how many people actually tuned into the radio and listened to the production the first time, but this way they're getting to really appreciate the reward of the work that they've put into this, and it's also such amazing validation of their perspectives and all of the issues that they have brought to light, just being able to put it into a community setting and tell them how important it is that they have these voices and that they've brought these issues to light.
So in the daytime tomorrow, you're going to both schools, and that's just for them.
Right.
And then at night, you're having this community conversation, community presentation. We should be clear, this is not being broadcast on the radio.
No.
This is live on stage. Are you doing it as like as a reading?
It'll be a similar setup to the original production.
Okay.
Yeah. The cast is slightly different because we weren't able to get everybody back due to conflicts and scheduling.
Sure.
But so we have a couple people that were in the original production along with some other cast members that are new to the production. So we've been rehearsing this last week and we have a tech tonight. But it'll be a similar stage setup where it'll be music stands and the Foley table with some microphones, and it'll be very minimal.
That was my question. Was the Foley still going to be part of it? Because
absolutely.
Then when you go to the performance tomorrow night at 7 o'clock out at Thunder Mountain Middle School, you can just close your eyes and listen like it is on the radio.
Absolutely.
And then open them and be part of the conversation that's going to happen after, right?
Right?
Now, you mentioned, Mary, that there's going to be a panel. Can you tell me about who's going to be on that panel and what we're going to be talking about?
I can.
Okay.
First of all, it's pretty cool to see the spectrum of the four plays in less than 1 hour.
Yeah.
That's something to kind of celebrate and to show up for. And the panel, I don't know how to call it a panel, but a conversation. The idea was to get adult leaders in the room or adult adults with more information, particularly as regards addiction and mental health, and that really powerful the one of the plays we're going to read called Real Stuff, I believe it's called. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll have Assembly Member Alicia Hughes Scannis will be there. There will be a representative from NAMI, Aaron Surma, a teacher from Yokosuke, Jordan Nigro from the ZAC, Frank Katas, who's been not only a teaching artist, but also a parent, and Mary Abakazuk, I just called her to help me with her pronunciation, who is a coach at the high school.
Okay.
She was in one of the first team plays I did at Perseverance in early 90s, but she's now also a parent and an advocate for health and committed to nonviolence in our community. So it's a rich group of people that will be
talking about all the different subjects, right?
And responding. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like really encouraging everyone to come, like you said, shut your eyes and listen to what the teens are saying, and have worked so hard to say. I just, like I said, collaborating to write a piece says a lot about every single brave artist that made it happen, as well as the leaders that made it happen. And what can we hear? What can we learn? And how can we bring our curiosities to? I mean, it's messy. Some of the stuff that comes up, there's not solutions for. But I've lately been wondering, why are adults leaders? What does leadership mean?
Mm.
And these young people have so much to share, and and they do it through humor, and they do it through going right to the heart of the matter in these pieces.
Yeah, ask good questions too, which I feel like, you know, adults were so used to knowing everything that we don't always ask those really good questions, and the teens are not afraid of an unsolvable problem and throwing out ridiculous ideas and being wrong and exploring what that looks like, which I really appreciate.
Traveling back to see what could have been done differently.
Like,
That's fun.
Yeah.
And Alex, are some of the student authors, because I know these plays were written in a classroom, so there's like many authors on all these plays that are listed. 147 authors.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I'm imagining that not all 147 can make it tomorrow night, but will you have some of the student authors there as well?
Ideally, we invited them to come, and we want them to come. I'm not sure if they'll be able to make it, but they'll be, like I said earlier, they'll be there for the daytime performances at the schools, so they'll get to kind of see their work. Hopefully they'll come and be able to witness the conversation, because I think that it would be really meaningful for the high schoolers to see adults listening to them and getting that validation and, participating in the conversation afterwards as well.
Yeah. Because I love the idea of hearing what the students have to say through the written word, but I also love the idea of seeing them watch and witness these adults see all of that work, and then also be able to foster that conversation that would happen between them, right? Especially when it's been a long time since I've been a young person, but I always remember the idea of like, wow, I don't want to just talk to my mom or my dad.
Right.
I'd love to be able to talk to another adult as another person, not them treating me as a kid, but as an artist or as a young, maybe younger than them, maybe a little less experienced, but like still having valid points and valid views that I would love to have a conversation about and maybe learn and exchange ideas, right? Because like Mary said, not all these problems are instantly solvable, but at least, you know, the idea, the best theater is holding up the mirror and saying, hey, here's what's happening in our community, and these four stories are very related to that, you know, which is really kind of cool.
Yeah, and as Alex was saying, the being able to have this powerful experience as a student at a young age, seeing something that you created being both talked about, presented in a professional way in front of audiences, it gives you a sense of confidence, I think. I think as a kid, I would have felt uplifted by that and felt as if I was being taken seriously and that people are actually listening to the things that I'm having a conversation about with my friends on a daily basis. And all of a sudden, it's something that's being discussed community-wide. And I think that's really powerful for a young person to see and can make a big change in their life.
Well, it is happening tomorrow night. It's at Thunder Mountain Middle School. It's at 7 o'clock. I'm assuming the doors will open around 6:30 or so. The plays, there's four of them. They will take about an hour, and then there'll be this community conversation. And that's really awesome. And if you can't, unfortunately, make it tomorrow night, you can listen to these plays, though. If the curiosity has brought you... what, you can't listen to the plays?
No, there were some broadcast issues in terms of the, just, yeah. Since they're under 18 and weren't able to sign consent forms and things like that,
we
can't, yeah, broadcast.
But you know what, Boston, it brings up something else.
Then you have to go tomorrow night.
Yeah, it brings up that, but I think also what I have appreciated in this is there's a buffer. If things are tender, you know, theater, young people created, but sometimes it's hard to talk to adults about things.
Absolutely.
But you put them out there through art, and then we as adults can, you know, sort through that and present it. You know, professional performers can present them, and it gives a little bit more confidence and also some coalescing with a different way instead of, I don't know, there's a buffer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Mary Elfson, Brian Crowder, Alex Wagner, thank you so much. We'll also see Brian and Alex in the plays,
yes, a little bit. Yes.
And thank you so much. You can go to theateralaska.org to find out more and get all the details. And there is a list of 147 playwrights and all the people and actors who are behind the scenes working on this thing. Check it out tomorrow at Thunder Mountain Middle School at 7 o'clock. That's Thursday, April 17th. Gunnath Cheesh for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Boston.
Yeah. Okay. Up next, we will talk to Theater at Latitude 58 about their production of Jesus Christ Superstar that is opening this week. But first, a savory moment. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Step in to the savory moment. Jollof rice arrived in late December. You'd been expecting the visit ever since this bright and spicy West African party dish saluted from your favorite cooking newsletter. You're always auditioning new recipes, especially warm, colorful ones, to ward off the winter winds and freezing rain on Alaska's southeast coast. Jollof rice stood on the doorstep, looking like a small bonfire, announcing it would be starring in your first ever Kwanzaa celebration, and that you were to gather ingredients. Canned whole tomatoes, red bell pepper, a habanero, ginger, garlic, basmati rice, broth, red onion, and turmeric and smoked paprika. As for the cooking pot, you received it as a Christmas gift, a 5.5-quart Dutch oven in smoky teal. Entering the kitchen, Jollof rice swept past you and headed straight for the pot, as though they'd arranged the meeting in advance. You were advised to take notes. Jollof rice is cooked in a thick sauce, so slow bake rather than using the stovetop. Make a large quantity, because dinner guests will want seconds, but more likely thirds. Cleats and boots cast aside, your Kwanzaa guests gathered around the table where the jollof rice glowed like embers, melting all worries about black ice on the roadways. Had the pot of rice looked up, it would have seen a ring of curious faces drawing closer to its warmth and, inevitably, to each other. Looking around the table, you saw brows furrowed, as if everyone was trying to identify a secret ingredient hiding in the shadows. No one was thinking about wind or rain or the treacherous travel to come. Peace can be like that, settling between cracks when something else, like jollof rice, has your attention. You just have to open the door. Find the full recipe for Southeast Coast Jollof Rice at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk anachaya ha anikach, gunish cheese.
This is Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us online via a live stream at YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram, the KTOO pages thereof. And you can say hi, leave a comment, or just give us a smiley face. It's all good. Theater at Latitude 58 opens their latest production, the musical Jesus Christ Superstar, tomorrow, Thursday, April 17th, and it runs for 2 weekends. I've got 3 folks here in the studio to tell us more about it. I have Karen Allen, who is the director of the production, and also I think you're the director of Theater at Latitude 58 as well, right?
We run on a nonprofit board.
Yeah.
But I tend to do a lot of the directing.
Excellent. And then Valerie Lindegaard, Gunnath Cheese for being here. Wasiti, how are you today?
Gunnath Cheese, I'm doing great.
And you're in the production?
I am in the production. I am Judas.
And you are Judas. Okay. And then I have Coda Neonakis. Gunnath Cheese, Wasiti, how are you, Coda?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. And you're in it as well.
Yes, I will be playing Jesus.
Jesus. Okay. Yes. So that's a good starting point because this is called Jesus Christ Superstar. And it's by Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice. It's the classic rock opera. And you're billing it as you've never seen it before.
Well, that's true. I am fairly certain that no one else's Jesus Christ Superstar looks like ours. For the first thing, usually it plays in giant rock arenas.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing it in McPheeters Hall.
Yes, and how are you? Because isn't the cast of this quite large?
There are 22 cast members.
Okay.
We're playing in the round.
Playing in the round. Excellent. So you're putting not on the stage part of McPheeters, but you're going to be in the middle and then have the seating.
We
go
have
around.
Audience down the sides of the room.
Okay. Oh, that's
so
awesome.
So it is very, very close.
Nice. And how are you doing the music part?
So for this one, because of the very, very small space, we are using performance tracks recorded by the London Philharmonic, which are provided through Concord Theatricals.
Okay, so that's a good way to do it because then there's really no room for an
There's
orchestra.
No room in that itty bitty room.
Yeah, that's a tiny space. And because in the past you've performed out in the valley too, right? You've performed at Thunder Mountain,
right? We perform at Thunder Mountain a lot of the time. We've also do a lot of shows at McPheeters Hall. They've really become our home in recent years.
Yeah, okay. And what's it like to, or I guess, how did the board decide to do Jesus Christ Superstar and why now?
So,
what a great question.
I love that. They all laughed at that one.
So there was a day in November when I woke up really unhappy, mm-hmm. as you can imagine, as a lot of us did. And I had different plans for the spring.
Okay.
That show I put away and we'll pull back out later.
Okay.
And I started talking, actually, Valerie and I were talking at work because we also work together.
Yes.
Okay.
And she said something about this show and brought up, and it reminded me that I had a concept I had always wanted to put on stage for this show. So I talked to the board and said, hey, guys, I kind of want to change plans. That okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it and I told them what I wanted to do. And they agreed.
The part she's leaving out about that was like an 11:30 p.m. text message.
Well, there is that.
right.
There is that.
So we were talking about this show, and the next day, that was like a Saturday night, the next day she's like, so the board says we can do the show, which was just astonishing that it happened that quickly.
And Valerie, you're not on the board.
I am not on the board of
the theater. But you're friends with Karen, okay.
Karen and I have known each other longer than either of us cares to admit.
That's accurate. Longer than Coda has, in fact, been alive.
That is correct. That is correct.
I can imagine.
Yeah,
I can imagine.
We've known each other quite a long time. We've been creative together quite a number of times. And then also our day job, we work together. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Karen, just I want to talk to each of these actors about their roles and stuff. But before we do that, just remind us about Theater at Latitude 58, the mission of Theater at Latitude 58, and the kind of work that you do.
So Theater at Latitude 58 is a community theater, and we like to think of ourselves as a theater of radical inclusion. Every single person who auditioned for this play and wanted a part in it is in it.
Nice.
And that is what we do, because how do you know if theater is what you do if you never get a chance to try it? And we work across wide age spans. There is a 59-year age gap between our youngest cast member in the show and our oldest.
Wow.
And we work to do educational theater that is accessible for everyone. We embrace professional artists, we embrace new artists, and we try really to work intergenerationally. Some of our newest performers, we have people in their 50s who've never been on stage before, and they're learning the ropes sometimes from a 14-year-old who's been doing this for 8 years now. And the friendships that develop and the style of work we do is very different than what a lot of other groups do. You know, we were founded in 2012 by Cinnamon Simpson with a mission of inclusion. And if anything, we've become more intense about that as the years went on.
That's awesome. That's really great. That's fantastic. And I just want to give the details here. So you open tomorrow and you run Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7. And then next weekend you run same thing, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
We run Wednesday, Thursday, Friday,
Wednesday,
Saturday,
next,
Sunday.
Oh, okay. So you do Wednesday through Saturday at 7, but then Sunday, the final Sunday, you'll have a 2 p.m. matinee. So no matinee this weekend, though.
No.
Okay. So three performances this week and five performances mm-hmm. next week. That's great. And, of course, the best place to find you all is on Facebook, I think, at this point,
right? Facebook and Instagram both have us.
Yeah.
And our tickets are available on the Jack's ticketing service
at the door. JAHC.org or at the door, which is always good. Okay, so let's talk about this production. So we know why we're doing it. How we're doing it is Valerie is playing Judas. Or should we start with Jesus? I guess we'd start with Judas.
You know, this show is really kind of peculiar where, you know, this is a story that Judas wants to tell and has the nerve to sing a big opening number in a play bearing someone else's name.
Yeah. So. That's what I remember is that you kind of begin this thing. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about the story of Jesus Christ Superstar, Valerie.
So I kind of... I want to preface this by saying none of us are the villains in our own story, right? Mm-hmm. We all think that we're the good guy.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and that's definitely how Judas in this script feels. You know, mm-hmm. Judas is the good guy, sees what's going on, has been hanging around with Jesus as a follower on for a very long time. We don't know exactly how long, but long enough.
Yeah.
And starts kind of seeing the rabble rousing as being potentially very dangerous to everybody involved. And from Judas's perspective, you know, yeah, I support you, but I don't want to die. I'm not here to be executed. Mm-hmm. And so really coming at the story from that perspective of, you know, why did Judas turn Jesus in? Why did you know, all of these things sort of happen and this roller coaster ride start? And that's sort of like that big opening number, really. That lays out a lot of that.
What's it called again?
Heaven on Their Minds.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of the big opening musical number, Heaven on Their Minds. That really is the discussion that's happening. You know, Judas is kind of having a conversation with himself. And, you know, one of the things that Karen and I talked about was I read the lyrics of the song and I go, this feels like to me when I need to go have a tough conversation with someone and I'm practicing the tough conversation before I go have it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the way that we've staged that, I think, to get that point across.
How many productions have you been involved with at Theater at Latitude 58, Valerie?
Oof.
You have been involved in...
Any show Karen's directed.
Five or six.
Blood Spirit, yeah. White Christmas... Fiddler on the Roof and Jesus Christ Superstar.
Nice.
And The Actor's
and
Nightmare.
And The Actor's Nightmare last season. Yeah, yeah. I think I'd remember that one.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So we took, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and what brought you to wanting to be on stage?
Oh my gosh, what a great question, Boston. So I have always been what people would describe as a character.
I understand
a little
that.
Bit of one. A little bit of one. I guess I was in my late 20s. And that's been longer ago than I want to talk about, too. So I was in my late 20s, and I was kind of looking for, like, something to do fitness-wise because I was like, I don't want to go lift weights, and I want to get on the treadmill and stuff. So my friend says, let's go take a ballet class. And I said, well, okay, I've tried a bunch of other stuff. Let's go do that. So we show up for ballet class. She came twice. I kept going and danced with Janice Holst for about 12 or 15 years. I ended up dancing with Janice Holst.
Oh, cool.
So that kind of started the whole thing. I was a marching band kid in high school. And so a little bit of a little bit of performing in front of people with that concert band, that sort of thing. But until I started dancing with Janice, I never really felt like I had this urge to be on stage in front of a big group of people. I was very nervous. Had terrible stage fright, really sure. terrible stage fright. And then just kind of learned that, yeah, you know, I perform for everybody, right? I perform for my boss. I perform for, you know, my friends,
right.
or, you know.
Right.
And so everybody in there, we've never met before, but we're still friends, and I'm just putting on a show for them, right?
Yeah.
And then still with the dance world, I still had never actually done a play before. I had done a little bit of Morally Impoverished, had worked with them a little bit, and was dancing with Richie Adon, who's no longer in town. And Karen came in because one of the things that Richie was doing with her group was preparing people for the audition process and preparing people to it was a lot of younger kids. There were like, I think the oldest one, I was the oldest one there. I was probably, you know, 15, 20 years between me and the next person. But, you know, I was doing everything that they were doing. I was there. But she was also helping them prepare for auditions for performing arts schools and conservatories and that sort of thing. And so Karen came in to give a directorial perspective when she had us doing our audition pieces, when Richie had us doing our audition pieces. And so that was, and Karen and I had known each other because our kids were in daycare together many, mm-hmm. many years
ago. Natural progression, it
yeah.
sounds like.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
really cool.
Yeah, so that was, and so Karen looked at me and she says, you know, if Richie can't use you, I can use you. And
yeah,
so that
there you
fall,
go.
I went and auditioned for Blythe Spirit.
And so there it was.
Yeah. So, and now I love it. You know, it's I'm going to quote Katie Jensen here, but theater's a gift that I give the audience. It's not, you know, it's not the adoration and things being heaped upon me. It's really a gift for the folks who come.
That's cool. I want to talk with Coda before we run out of time. Hi, Coda.
Hi.
So you're playing Jesus.
I am.
Yes. How's that experience?
So it's very interesting and cool. So I was actually not Jesus at first.
Okay.
I was Annas. So I just got put into this.
Promoted.
Yes. How many weeks ago?
Three and a half weeks ago.
So.
And she has risen to the occasion beautifully.
She has risen indeed.
She has risen. Yeah, indeed.
I have. So it's just been so fun getting to know the character and being Jesus. I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when did you come to acting?
Oh, gosh. I think it was like 12 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
So.
And have you been working with a theater at Latitude 58?
So, no, I actually just moved here.
Oh, you did?
7 months ago.
Where from?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Well, welcome to Juno.
Thank
and then you got involved. So you've been acting back there and then you got involved here.
Yes.
That's
yes.
so cool. And what brought you to Juno?
My husband is in the Coast Guard, so
I see. Okay,
kind of forced to be here,
right.
But I love it so far. It's great. I promise.
That's good. Well, usually what happens is people move here, they find groups like Theater at Latitude 58, they fall in love with Juno, and they never leave. So welcome.
Heard. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes. And what's your favorite thing about playing Jesus?
I just think. Interacting with everybody, because usually leads don't get to, and they're like in their own little bubble. But in this, like, I interact with everybody in the play, and I just love that, because I don't like it when the leads are like, oh, I'm a lead, and I'm just myself, and I in my own bubble, and I'm like, well, you have to interact with everybody and become friends with everybody. So that's
I love that.
Part.
That's yeah. great. Well, it's Jesus Christ Superstar. It opens tomorrow night. It runs for 2 weekends. Best place to find information is you can get tickets at jahc.org, or you can find the theater at Latitude 58 on Facebook and on Instagram. And it's fantastic. Gwyneth Cheech for being here today. I really appreciate you all coming in.
Thank you for having
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Lawson.
And that will do it for Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, a look ahead to the upcoming music collaboration between Con Brio and the Orpheus Project. Plus, spring is here, and it's time for Litter-Free Cleanup Day once again. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Gwyneth Cheech, and have a joyous Juno evening.